Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. I'm Monty Larrick, and I'm joined by Eric Scheidler, the executive director of the Chicago-based Pro-Life Action League. Eric, anti-life forces are at it again in the General Assembly with two bills that threaten the unborn. House Bill 40 not only requires taxpayers to fund abortions for women enrolled in the Medicaid program, it also mandates that the taxpayer-subsidized insurance plans of female state government workers include coverage for abortions. In addition, House Bill 40 essentially codifies into state law Roe versus Wade while removing legal protections for the unborn.
Well, House Bill 40 is really one of the most radical measures we've ever seen in the state of Illinois. It's being done by a bait-and-switch kind of a tactic. The sponsors have claimed that and they're trying to build on the whole election of Donald Trump and his comments about Roe versus Wade and about changing the Supreme Court to kind of throw fuel on the fire of fear that if Roe versus Wade were overturned, in the state of Illinois, abortion would suddenly become illegal. That's simply false. That is a false claim. It's a lie. In reality, if Roe versus Wade were overturned, Illinois would still have abortion. We would have to fight that battle here in Illinois. We hope to fight that battle someday. That battle's not coming soon. But what they're doing is trying to use the whole Roe versus Wade controversy and the profound ignorance about Roe. You know, they claim most people support Roe. That's technically true, but people don't actually know what it says. When they find out that Roe versus Wade and its companion case, Doe versus Bolton, made legal abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy for whatever reason at all, they don't support that. They, in fact, support many of the common sense measures that Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton would not allow. So anyway, they're playing on that ignorance and they're playing on that fear because what they really want is taxpayer funding of abortion. Last year, they attempted a different bill that was just about taxpayer funding, and they weren't able to get it through. So they're trying to try this new tactic to build on those fears. If this bill were to pass, thousands of unborn children would die. And this isn't just a question of taxpayers paying for abortions that would otherwise happen anyway. This is a question of abortions that would never happen, because without that taxpayer funding, the mom would choose life. Now, some people feel like, well, great, you know, let's not have to pay for the childbirth, let's not have to pay for the education and pay for, you know, for poor people. I think the idea of killing the poor in utero in order to save taxpayer dollars is disgusting, despicable, and un-American.
It's discriminatory.
Absolutely. It's a denial of the American dream. If you really believe that it's a fiscally responsible thing to kill unborn children so we won't have to pay for them to go to high school or pay for them to be given, you know, basic medical care or anything like that, I think that's a horrible anti-American and, in many cases, racist view to have. We should be welcoming every child, no matter what the circumstances of their conception, whether they're rich or poor, and we should not be, at the same time, forcing taxpayers to pay for abortion. Most people are opposed to that.
And this bill essentially would leave out the possibility that these kids, these future children, could be a real asset to America.
You know, the list of people who would have been aborted following the logic of Planned Parenthood and the supporters of bills like this include Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and Alexander Hamilton, among others. So some of our nation's leaders, many admired by people who are abortion supporters, would not have survived the gauntlet of aborting the poor. So we absolutely have to resist HB 40 and any measure that would try to force taxpayers to pay for abortion.
Well, you think about that. A little money will be taken out of your paycheck every week, every couple weeks, to pay for abortions.
It's horrifying to think of that. You know, you look at your pay slip and to think you're funding abortion because the Illinois General Assembly has decided that you must. You know, but fortunately, so far, they have not passed this bill. We've been fighting it very hard. We're hopeful that we're going to make it through this legislative season without that bill coming for a vote and passing. But it's been very, very close. It's a very, very tight battle, and we have to stay vigilant.
What do you think are the political motivations behind this bill?
Yeah, this is very much of a political type of a bill. For one thing, the forces of abortion are looking for some wins around the country because of how bruisingly they lost in the general election last year, and how they're losing right now with the appointment of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, who we feel would be another vote in favor of pro-life legislation and upholding some of those pro-life measures that have saved so many lives around the country. They really want to find someplace they can win one for a change, and they're looking to very liberal, very blue states like Illinois to try to win a victory that they can, you know, tout to their supporters. So the liberal forces in the state, the pro-abortion forces, are looking for a political gain here, something that they can show their supporters to build up, you know, votes and turnout for the next election. At the same time, there's a political element for the Republican Party in Illinois as well. If Governor Rauner were to sign a bill like this into law, those of us who supported him in the last election as a better candidate than Pat Quinn would have absolutely no reason to do so again. And if we're going to have somebody who will sign taxpayer funding of abortion into law in our state, why not just stand back and let a rabid pro-abort, somebody who is in the pocket of Planned Parenthood, who, an enemy we know as an enemy, you know, why not let them take over? It was terribly disappointing when Governor Rauner signed the conscience bill and forced our pregnancy centers, our pro-life doctors, to start making abortion referrals and talking about all the wonderful, great benefits of abortion. Fortunately, the courts have already begun to award stays of that law on behalf of some of those who have been suing the state over it. The state is going to be involved in a lengthy litigation, and I believe that law will eventually be overturned and won't be enforced on anybody. But it's very intimidating, and it's caused great disruption in our outreach to women considering abortion. The pregnancy centers that have had to curtail their activities or even shut down because of this law. Governor Rauner gave us that, and he didn't have to. If he were to sign HB 40, I think it'd be hard to find a single pro-life voter in the state who would go along and cast a vote for him next time around.
Speaking of Judge Neil Gorsuch, is he as pro-life as Democrats fear he is?
We don't know his opinion on Roe versus Wade or what his opinion on abortion is, because he has very wisely kept that to himself, as a judge should do. And everything he has said in his hearings has really been music to our ears. Some are concerned about some of the statements he said about Roe versus Wade being the law of the land, but that's just simply a fact. He was stating facts back to senators like Dick Durbin, who's trying to catch him in a trap, a clumsy trap. Nothing that Neil Gorsuch has said has caused me the slightest bit of concern. Quite the contrary. I have been deeply impressed with the craftiness, the thoughtfulness, the carefulness of his answers on these questions, refusing to be backed into a corner, refusing to take any of the bait that has been fed out to him by the liberal pro-abortion senators during the hearings. I feel extremely encouraged by his wisdom, by his integrity, by his constitutionalism, and by the words of his dissertation for his PhD in philosophy from Oxford University about euthanasia, in which he said that it is always wrong for private persons to take innocent life. And that applies to euthanasia just as much as it does to abortion, as people like Senator Dick Durbin, formerly pro-life, now pro-abortion, recognized. So I think we have great cause for optimism about Neil Gorsuch.
You mentioned euthanasia, and that could be a growing issue that we might have to deal with even here in Illinois. We know there's a big push for that in Washington, D.C.
That's right. Back in the 1980s, pro-lifers were prophesying that abortion would come first and euthanasia would come second. Whenever you can classify an entire group of human beings as subject to being killed at someone else's decision as not worthy of life, having no fundamental right to life, that can be applied to other groups of people too. First it's the unborn, then it's the elderly. Now this whole thing has come under color of people making their own personal decision. They talk about death with dignity, but we know very well from examples like Europe, the Netherlands, for example, or Belgium, where they have euthanasia, that doctors and family members and others are deciding on behalf of sick people whether they should be allowed to live or not. We've seen the pressure that's being exerted on the infirm, the elderly, the sick, to choose, let me put scare quotes around that, to choose death with dignity when their medical care becomes burdensome for others or expensive. And you know, for the rich and the affluent, for the powerful, the decision to take your life at the end because you don't want to suffer any more pain or because, you know, you feel like you're at the end of it all, that's a luxury. But for the poor, it becomes a burden. It becomes a way to kill people, innocent people. And we've seen that. We've seen that again and again and again everywhere, every state, every country where the euthanasia has been legalized. They've been taking the lives of innocent people against their will. That's what will happen in Illinois if euthanasia comes to our state too. Fortunately, voters seem to have recognized this. The attempt to get ballot measures that would legalize euthanasia has been stalled again and again. So this is an issue on which we really have not lost the people yet. It's one where we are still pretty strong, but we're going to have to fight very hard to keep this preying on our sick and elderly from being enacted in Illinois.
One of the real kind of indirect dangers of Obamacare was this whole idea of euthanasia. It has to be your hope that the new health care bill will guard against that.
Well, you know, I'm not a health care policy expert by any means, and I'm pretty open-minded about any health care plan, provided that it would protect unborn children and the infirm and the elderly from being preyed upon, from having their lives forfeit because of somebody else's desires. That said, the kind of comprehensive health care plans that Obamacare requires do make it more difficult to avoid the problems of forcing people into, choosing euthanasia perhaps if it comes to that, but certainly having services denied them. The kinds of plans that provide a more sort of catastrophic coverage that would protect people from, you know, bankruptcy in the case of very severe illness or injury, but where the healthcare choices remain with private individuals, might be the best solution to this kind of a problem. But whatever the case may be, we will be fighting hard to protect innocent life in any healthcare measure that will be going forward.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. We'll continue our conversation with Eric Scheidler with the Chicago-based Pro-Life Action League after this. Join the Illinois Family Institute for a special forum, Climate Change and the Christian, with Dr. Calvin Beissner in Rockford, Arlington Heights, Orland Park, and Peoria.
The green movement threatens to trap the poor in poverty and rob people of property rights by touting false or exaggerated claims of eco-disaster.
Dr. Calvin Beissner is the founder of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. You don't want to miss his presentation on climate change and the Christian. What's true? What's not settled science? And what's our responsibility?
Now, it's true that if you love God, you will try to take good care of the earth. And I encourage you to do exactly that. But that's not gospel. That's law.
The Illinois Family Institute Climate Change and the Christian Forum is free. So bring your family and friends. Visit IllinoisFamily.org for times, dates, and locations. Or call 708-781-9328.
Hi, this is Kurt Jarrus, the host of Veracity Hill. Veracity Hill is a radio podcast dedicated to striving for truth on faith, politics, and society. I don't have all the answers, but join me as I explore important topics with guests from respective fields. To learn more, text the word VERACITY to 555-888. That's VERACITY to the number 555-888, or check out our website at veracityhill.com.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. I'm Monty Lurick, and with me is Eric Scheidler, the executive director of the Chicago-based Pro-Life Action League. Eric, at the outset, we talked about House Bill 40, but there's another very big anti-life bill that has to be very concerning to you. It is House Bill 3735. It seems like it's maybe a possible replacement for bubble zones, which are under attack in the courts. It talks about intimidation of people who counsel and maybe pray outside abortion clinics. What's your take on this?
Well, it's a complicated bill. It's a sentencing bill. It's about factors that a judge can consider in sentencing somebody who's been convicted of some kind of a crime. What this bill does is it includes violence against women's clinics, which is already illegal in the state of Illinois, as it is in any state in the union. You know, attacking a clinic is always going to be against the law. But it takes that, and more concerningly, it takes something called intimidation and makes that a factor that a judge can consider in sentencing. Intimidation could mean almost anything. I mean, if you look at the actual statute of intimidation, it's bizarre. I think people will be shocked to discover that you can be found guilty of the felony of intimidation for trying to boycott somebody or strike. Now, there's a line that says, you know, something about lawful authority, the lawful authority to boycott and so forth. I think a court would very narrowly read that and has in the past. But the idea that they would find yet another way to use somebody's subjective opinion about whether they feel intimidated by pro-life activity to come down hard on pro-life activists is really troubling. You know, when we're out there offering alternatives to abortion, or we're showing the victims of abortion in the public square, we're trying to educate and offer help. But many people consider that to be intimidation because they don't want to hear about abortion. They don't want to hear anybody suggest that the choice they've made or are about to make is wrong. And no matter how compassionately and peacefully we might offer that assistance or offer that information, there are some people who are going to declare that it's intimidation. That could mean prison sentences and massive fines for pro-lifers who are simply sincerely and peacefully and civilly trying to reach out and engage in public discussion about abortion.
Could intimidation potentially mean prayer outside an abortion clinic?
Many people who go to a Planned Parenthood facility for abortion, for example, will declare that someone standing there quietly praying is intimidating them. What's intimidating them is the fact that they know they're about to do something very wrong, and somebody is acknowledging that with their mere presence. Anything could be considered intimidation. We're really concerned about these sort of subjective measures for what constitutes a felony that could send someone to 10 years or more of prison.
This could have a real chilling effect on folks who want to participate in demonstrations, rallies, or counseling outside abortion clinics.
You know, every time they pass a measure like the bubble zone in Chicago, or any of these other buffer bubble zones around the country that restricts free speech, people are intimidated and get the wrong idea. You know, I've had people contact me to ask whether they can sidewalk counsel in other parts of the state because they've heard about the bubble zone. It's only in Chicago, and we've still been sidewalk counseling despite that bubble zone. We're fighting that bubble zone in federal court right now. But, you know, it's hard to get the word out. If people hear about a restriction on freedom of speech, that does have a deeply chilling effect and makes it harder to recruit them to come out and join us on the front lines as we need them to do. So that's another element of this. Even if the law is one that would not have a direct impact on the work we're doing right now, it does have that intimidating and chilling effect on those who hear about it.
So tell us how we can put a stop to House Bill 40, taxpayer funding of abortions, and House Bill 3735, the intimidation bill.
You've got to contact your state representative. Both of those bills are in the House of Representatives right now and could come up for a vote at any time. So call your state representative, call both the Springfield and the district office, and call. Don't just send an email or send a tweet. It's when someone has to pick up the phone and answer a phone call and write down on a piece of paper what a constituent said that our voices get heard. If we clog up the phones and we require someone to actually do something, pick up that phone, that's when it can make a real difference. So call your state rep at both the district and Springfield office to say vote no on House Bill 40, vote no on House Bill 3735.
And I would think a big outpouring at some of the events that you folks hold at the Pro-Life Action League would be a sign to lawmakers that the numbers are there.
That's right. I mean, any lawmaker who thinks this is a good idea should consider the fact that pro-lifers are very mobilized, that we've been out on the streets, that we've been, you know, just last month we were out there in the tens of thousands all over the country rallying to defund Planned Parenthood. And we're paying very close attention to what's happening in Springfield and will not forget on Election Day how our representatives voted on these very important measures.
What's ahead for the Pro-Life Action League? I know you are going to be coming up on the annual Face the Truth tour, for instance.
Well, we've got our Way of the Cross for Victims of Abortion that we're holding at abortion clinics all over the country, and that includes several locations around Chicagoland on Good Friday, April 14th, where we go out and we pray. We pray solemnly for the victims of abortion, for their mothers and fathers, for those who are paying for abortion, driving women to the abortion clinic. We pray for the abortion clinic staff, for our legislators, for voters, for our community, for our media, a whole host of prayers that we offer on Good Friday, this very solemn day when Christians remember the passion and death of Jesus Christ, an innocent man whose blood was shed for us all. You know, our unborn brothers and sisters are innocent too before the law, and their blood is being shed at the local Golgotha of the abortion clinic. So I would invite people to come out to the Planned Parenthood facility in Aurora and other locations on Good Friday. And that's also being held around the country for anybody out of state who might be hearing about this. We also have the second annual day of prayer and protest against Planned Parenthood. That's coming on April 29th and in some locations on Friday, April 28th. Again, all over the country. We'll be at the Aurora Planned Parenthood facility with a Jericho march, so a very biblical kind of an outreach to the community, marching around the block of Planned Parenthood in Aurora. There'll be another demonstration taking place on the overpasses of I-290 that same day. So if you go to protestpp.com, you can find those locations and take part in this annual event with dozens of other sites all over the country, other Planned Parenthood facilities. And moving forward, we have our Face the Truth tour coming up in the summer in July, and we will be holding other events in Illinois and around the country as events unfold on so many of these different fronts in the pro-life battle.
Eric Scheidler, the executive director of the Chicago-based Pro-Life Action League, thank you so much. God bless. How can folks connect with Pro-Life Action League?
If you visit prolifeaction.org, our website, you can find out all about us. You can find out resources for being a voice for the unborn child in your community, and educational materials and information about what's happening in current events and all kinds of other things. So we encourage you to visit prolifeaction.org and get activated.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.